When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey guys, this is Erica Ramirez, senior editor at Billboard, and with me today I have my coworker Stephen Horowitz.
Hello.
You've been on the podcast a few times.
I love talking.
Well, I've been meaning to have you on the podcast to talk about some R&B, so this is like a perfect time, seeing with what's going on and what's coming out. But first and foremost, we did an episode of the podcast where listeners asked some questions, and there was a question that they asked on what I thought about the difference between UK R&B artists and US R&B artists. And to sum up what I said, I pretty much said that I feel like UK artists have a little bit of more of a soulful kind of feel to them, at least the most recent R&B artists, and the US R&B artists are a little bit more experimental with their music, with their R&B music.
But the US ones?
Yes.
I have the opposite opinion.
Do you?
I do.
Well, this is why I have you here. So what do you think as far as the difference between both?
Well, I think the UK has pretty much been progressive in most aspects of music over the past few years, at least, because I feel like a lot of the exports that come from England to the US, they kind of take over radio, and we always say nothing ever sounded like this before. Or, you know, it offers a different sound or perspective, even like Adele or Sam Smith. Like, there were not US artists who are achieving that kind of fame with that kind of music. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're doing different things, like Disclosure and Sam Smith were on the charts, as well as Sam Smith and Naughty Boy with Latch and then La La La. And, you know, we don't have that kind of music coming out of the U.S. that's doing as well.
Yeah.
I think there's probably an exoticism to it. I think it's also something to do with the cyclical nature of music. Like, a lot of the R&B music coming out of the UK is very house influenced and 90s influenced, and
right.
I guess you can call that taking chances, because not a lot of music here is succeeding with that, but there it is.
Right. I was going to bring up like the new, at least US R&B artists. Like, you know, I just put up the EP of Daniel Caesar, and I had you like take a listen, and Nick Hakim, and they're Shy Girls. So it's more, that's when I think of like the experimental type of R&B, where like even Miguel, where they do use like references, past references of other R&B or soulful, like soul music. But it's still a little bit more like stripped down and lo-fi kind of from that group. Because I know we share like the like of Shy Girls and Nick Hakim. So what's kind of your take on those new crop of R&B artists?
I definitely agree, and I probably am about to contradict myself, but I do think that those people are taking chances in music. They're just not finding a mainstream success with it.
Yeah.
Yes, I like Shy Girls. Yes, I like Nick Hakim.
Right.
Banks is actually from the UK, but, you know, that just backs my point.
So you're right on both sides.
I'm basically,
we're both right.
Basically, R&B is very experimental right now. No, I do think that there's a sect of musicians in the U.S. that are taking chances with R&B, and, you know, they're getting a little bit more soulful, trying different instruments, you know, using a lot more synths, making it electronic R&B,
right.
And I think there's a huge movement for that. I mean, Cyril Hahn's another example of that, even though Cyril is from Canada.
Yeah.
Well, he actually used Shy Girls on his song, so technically he's a producer. But, you know, there are a lot of people who are operating in that like Rachelle Jordan as well, someone mm-hmm. who I talk about a lot. It's definitely pushing the envelope when it comes to R&B music and what we think of it. Has anyone succeeded here on that kind of wavelength? I don't really think so. I mean, maybe The Weeknd, but technically, you know, he's Canadian, so.
Even though that wasn't a shot, that somehow sounded like a shot.
No, no. Even though I mean, wasn't a shot, even though I don't like The Weeknd.
So it did end up being a shot. But I think it's weird that the kind of big voices of the UK as far as R&B goes are finding more success than the big voices of R&B in the US. Like, I am a huge fan of Jasmine Sullivan and Elle Varner, but then it's like Sam Smith is your guy right now. So I don't know. Maybe we'll, you know, switch up once those two girls release their album. But then that might be around the same time that Adele puts out her album.
So I don't know. I mean, like, I found that the artists who are operating on a higher stratosphere, so to speak, like people like your Jasmine Sullivans or your Chris Browns or Trey Songz or August Alsina, whoever it may be, I don't find them to be necessarily innovative. Right. I don't think that they're challenging the norms of the genre. I think they're operating within whatever is popular, like that August Alsina sound, that Ty Dolla $ign sound, that Trey Songz set. Like, it's all very similar. And I think that's boring.
But a lot of that sound is also the DJ Mustard sound.
Well, we can't fault DJ Mustard.
No, I mean, you know what's funny is I thought of that when you said Ty Dolla $ign, and then I thought of Jeremih, and then...
Exactly. I mean, he's kind of doing that whole sound, too. There is it's like a bedroom feel.
Yeah.
That, like, very, like, deep, bassy, light synth, finger-snapping kind of music.
Yeah.
And, I mean, some of it's good. I find a lot of it to be repetitive and not necessarily innovative.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a place for it.
Who do you think is innovative? Who are you listening to?
Who am I listening to right now? Well, again, I'm really into the UK scene. I'm really into Moco. She's this R&B singer who does tracks with Chase and Status, and she's kind of like this house singer. But she comes from the R&B world, so it has that kind of R&B feel to it. And also Mnek, who is this guy who has actually found a lot of success in the UK as a songwriter and a performer. He has a few singles that are doing really well over there, and I can imagine him having the same kind of Sam Smith success maybe a year from now, just based on what I've seen happening over there.
I think it's weird that the whole, because speaking of him, of like the dance type of R&B infused music does so good in the UK. And then I feel like we have a lot of people that are hard on that type of music when it's over here. But it's also because I assume it's because of artists that we've heard everything but that. And it was also amazing, like Usher and Chris Brown, where like I think Chris Brown actually shines on when it comes to like dance R&B music.
I will say that he is one of the few artists that does that very well.
Yeah.
But I, you know, having listened to his new album, X, I feel like he does do a lot of that Trey Songz kind of stuff. Trey Songz is even on the album.
Yes.
Like the song he has with R. Kelly, I find that to be a little rote.
Yeah, you know, there wasn't a lot of that like signature R&B dance type of songs that Chris Brown usually does. And
right.
Even like, well, Fine China has the whole MJP, and that's a song on the deluxe version.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really inspected the liner notes, but someone that he's collaborated with has been... Benny Benassi, who I think worked on the Fame album or Graffiti. I feel like it was Fame
and Fortune.
Yeah.
There's some tracks on Fortune also.
Right. So he was working with those kind of guys. And from what I understand, I know that Diplo worked on this album, but he doesn't really operate in that kind of very heavy EDM world in the same way that Benny Benassi does. So I think maybe he consciously tried to shy away from that.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's very few traces of that on X.
Yeah. Well, I did want to bring up Nick Hakim again because he came through the Billboard office and played us two of his songs, one whose title is Cold and then another one called The Want, which actually is a new song. And I am a huge fan of Nick Hakim, but I just was introduced to Nick Hakim like 2-3 weeks ago. And then I like shared his music to the staff, including you. And like his new EP is out, which I'm a huge fan of. But what did you think of Nick Hakim when he came came through the office.
Well, he was here.
that he was.
He's not really the kind of, he doesn't have the same look that you'd anticipate him having based on his music. You know, he's heavily bearded. He just looks like a normal guy, and right. He is a normal guy yeah. Who just happens to make great music.
Yeah.
But, you know, he is operating in this kind of alt R&B world where you can call it R&B, but, you know, there are a lot of elements of other things. There are hints of electronic music. Right. There are hints of folk music. There are hints of, you know, alternative. Everything kind of folds into it. And I think he has a really good sound because of that. He somehow managed to tie that all together while making it sound really casual.
Yeah. Here's a snippet of one of the songs that he performed called The Want.
Inside of me, at least I want it to be. I wanted her. She wanted her.
Once you describe Nate Hawking's music, I kind of thought of something. Do you think that would work for Usher? That sound?
I don't know. I think Usher is such a bold voice.
Yeah.
And Nick has a very, it's rasped and very quiet. Even when he talked, he was very quiet.
Yeah.
I think if Usher knew how to keep the lower end of his voice under control and do what Nick basically does, maybe he could.
Yeah.
And that might be a really good sound for him.
Yeah, I just feel like he's still, and I've said this like millions of times, so people might be tired of me saying that. I just feel like he's trying to find a balance between what he has made in the past, which has been the whole R&B hip-hop feel, and then also the dance R&B feel.
Right.
So I just thought of that when you mentioned how, you know, like Nick Hakim and all these other people like Shy Girls and other artists have that like electro feel, but it's not as like heavy as like, you know, dance and all that.
Yeah.
So speaking of new music from not so new artists, so Jennifer Hudson released her third studio album, which I can't believe it's her third album. I feel like she would have so many more
albums by now.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know why I was surprised to realize that J-Hud was her third album.
I mean, that's what happens when you're a double threat.
Oh, as you,
and actually a triple threat if you count her being a spokeswoman for Weight Watchers.
No,
actually,
but she's good at that.
She is really good at it. I don't know if she's doing it anymore. From my understanding, she isn't. But I mean,
her album has that kind of feel also. And it was surprising for me to know that there was only like two ballads on the album. And it was closer to the latter end of the album. Because with such a big voice, you would think that you would get more ballads. And also just going off of what she used to do, which is more of an R&B feel. But then, like, I'm also not surprised that it can be a little bit dance with, like, Spotlight wasn't just, like, a straight R&B record. Like, it had a little bit of, like, a dance feel to it as well.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely dance to that record.
Yeah.
I think she was trying to do that with this album, too. I mean, she called this album her most, or, like, I guess her personal album.
Mm-hmm.
I would call foul on that. I don't really think it's that personal. I really wish she would make an album that felt more like we were getting to know Jennifer Hudson.
Right.
But I think Jennifer Hudson wants to have a good time, and her records really reflect that. That's why we get two ballads on, a 12, 13-track album.
Right.
And the songs are, they're fine. They're very Jennifer Hudson-y. Like, I found that all of her albums kind of sound very similar.
Yeah.
She has a retro feel, a good vibe.
Yeah, but I do agree.
Normal song structures.
I do agree with wanting to know more of Jennifer Hudson from Jennifer Hudson. I feel like all the personal stuff that we know about her is like through news stories and all that, which, you know, is a whole different story than her story. So I completely agree that she could take that opportunity to actually talk about that in her music. I mean, if she's ready is one thing. I guess that's the thing.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, the old age problem of being a musician. How do you separate your personal life from your public life?
Right.
And, you know, it doesn't really hit as hard when you have such a fine definition from where it begins and ends.
Well, Jennifer Hudson told us a little bit about like the making of the album and the dance R&B type of feel. And this is what she had to say.
It's definitely a dancier sound. It's the upside, the upbeat side of me. So, it has really good energy on it, and it's a lot of, like, good dance music. I just wanted something to represent the girl, the person, you know. And I also wanted to bridge, like, old school with the new school. And it just ended up being that way. It was never anything, like, that was planned. But that just turned out to be the makeup of the Jay Hudness and all the good energy and the old school feel. And, you know, it's like an album full of colors.
So you wanted to talk a little bit about the Keisha Cole album.
Yes.
Because you were one of the lucky ones that got a little bit of a sneak peek before the release.
I did. I've heard some of the tracks.
So how do you feel as far as just the tracks that you've
heard? Well, I mean, Keisha Cole's a complicated artist because I feel like her first album was so incredibly strong and personal.
Right.
That it's very hard to follow that up. And I think she's come close. She's had some records that I think are really, really...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Personal and effective, and like one that comes to mind is Long Way Down. That was on her fans are gonna kill me. I think it was calling
All Hearts.
Calling All Hearts.
Yeah,
I think it was on that record. But that felt like one of the best Keisha Cole songs to come out since her first album. I think it's called Point of No Return.
Yeah,
and it comes out, I want to say October 14th.
Right.
I feel like there is a lot of personal touch to this album. The songs sound fine. The one thing that really bothered me about it, and you know, this is maybe a personal opinion, but I thought her voice isn't as strong anymore.
So when you say that, what do you mean?
I mean, you heard how she like wails on Love on the first album.
Oh my gosh, I love that song.
Yeah,
yes.
And like basically all those songs, she is pushing those notes out, and you could feel it. And this album just feels like there are often times where I thought she was missing notes.
Yeah.
And it just sounded like she wasn't trying hard enough, which I'm sure she would disagree with. And, you know, I think any artist would probably disagree with that statement, but that's how it kind of came across.
I just remember seeing her in Oakland when Kanye West brought her out and he was opening for Usher.
Right.
Which, even saying that right now, is crazy.
A lot of people don't remember that Keisha Cole was really tight with Kanye.
Yes.
Like, she sang on the second track on College Dropout.
I haven't seen the name. But yeah, he was
And she's the one who's doing the ad-libs at the end.
Wasn't he on one of the songs on the first album? Like, he had ad-libs on, I don't know if it was I Changed My Mind.
Well, there was a version of I Changed My Mind. Well, so he produced I Changed My Mind. He does have ad-libs on the version without Shine, but there's a version with Shine on it.
Look at you.
Yeah, I was so into that first album.
But the reason I bring that up is because when she even performed, she was just so raw. And it was just, you could tell it's just, she was so hungry and so passionate. And I asked you this before, you know, we started recording offline, if she's sad, angry Keisha Cole, or if she's happy Keisha Cole.
Yeah, no, I think she's angry. And, you know, maybe I need to hear all of the record at
right.
once, but... from what I heard, she sounded angry on the tracks I listened
to. How's the songwriting?
I thought they were okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was, again, like, I'd take one Nick Hakim over like 10 Keisha Coles at this point. Just because I...
Shots fired.
No, not even shots. It's just I really like when artists take...
Risks.
They take risks, yeah.
I don't know. It's funny because you want... We push or are very adamant of having R&B artists sound like those classic albums of theirs that we love, like
right.
Usher and Confessions or Keisha Cole and her first album. Like, and then I feel like sometimes they hear us and they take that a little too far. And maybe this is what's going on, where it's just like a little too, maybe she took it too seriously.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what to. I don't really know where she's at in her career. I mean, basically, her life is so public now that it's kind of it's the opposite of the Jennifer Hudson problem. If you think about it, like she had the reality show. She's kind of lived this public breakup. She goes on Twitter and like gets in beefs with people.
I remember.
So she lives her life very publicly, and I admire that a lot because, you know, that's what fans want to see. They feel like they know Keisha Cole.
Right.
But, I mean, when it comes to getting people to listen to your record and really identifying with it, how many times can you have your fans identify with what you're going through when they already know what you've gone through?
Right. That is kind of the opposite of J-Hud.
Yeah.
Well, this, I believe it's the 27th. So it's Saturday, is the 20-year anniversary of Brandy's first album, her self-titled debut album, which I'm super excited about because that was probably, that was the first, well, I bought, Brandy and I bought Crazy Sexy Cool around the same time. So I can't really remember which one was my first. I believe it was Brandy.
It's probably
Brandy. Brandy came out like a couple months before. I think Crazy Sexy Cool came out in like November of 94. So that and Moesha pretty much changed my life, but listening back to it, cause I kind of, it does feel like it's perfect then. Like you could tell it was 1994 when you hear Brandy's album.
No, definitely. What did you identify with about it? Cause I re-listened to it today, just because, you know, I haven't listened to it in a minute. And I found that there are a lot of teenage themes, like a la JoJo's first album or like Ariana Grande's first album, where it's kind of like this very innocent type of love. So, yeah. I mean, is that what
no, made that's you like absolutely. The album? There was like Best Friend, which, like, I think if you make a song like that right now, it would have come off a little cheesy. And back then, it was like perfect. And like you said, it's there's this innocence to it, which I could definitely identify to. It's like a first love type of feel, your first time getting heartbroken, where now it's like not that deep, but back then it was like the end of the world.
Right.
So, it's definitely, I related to it because we were around the same age group. And I also wore overalls and probably wore ridiculous hats that I don't want to admit to. And but
I've
like,
seen your throwback Thursday.
Oh my god! I put too much of myself out there. But that, and then also even like the show Moesha, where just you could relate to kind of what was going on at that moment or what she was singing about, like as far as Brandy goes. And it was, you know, the lyrics you could tell were very serious to her, and at that age. They were also very serious to you. That's why it's very much like a trip down memory lane type of feel when I listen to it now.
Yeah, I think it's a classic album. It's a classic R&B album. Right. I mean, a lot of things about or a lot of classic R&B albums kind of feel dated.
Yeah,
I kind of did get that vibe when I was listening today, but I think it captured a moment in time so well. That, I mean, it's timeless in that way. Like that feels like 1994. It feels like. Like someone that you've been familiar with your entire life, essentially. I mean, for both of us, like we've been listening to Brandy since the beginning. So,
right.
And we've, you know, grown up through the years listening to her and seeing how she's progressed. And it kind of makes that original debut a little bit more important.
Mm, it also makes me remember the Kobe Bryant rumors and the voice. The voice man rumors and like all that stuff. I just think it's funny. It's like, Brandy tells a little bit about herself, little, like she reveals it little by little. Like she's not just out here. Like it took her to like what, Human or this last album?
I think it was Aphrodisiac. That was her divorce album.
Yes, where she was actually like, I'm just going to say what I'm really going through.
Right.
I grabbed those lyrics and wrote them down in love letters. So I clearly knew what she was going through.
Exactly. Yeah, it really served its purpose. I mean, looking back, and looking at today, really, how many records do we have that feel like that?
Right.
I mean, I'd have to Google for a little bit to be like, to see. Personal albums, R&B.
No, but it is hard to actually have an album that you can, one, even call a classic.
Right.
And also just consider it like your album. Like, it's hard enough to be like, this is your song, but to call something your album, it's like harder, I feel like. Every year that passes.
Right. And also, I mean, there's kind of this idea in the music business where if you name your album, it's your eponymous album, then it's
right.
Like that's your grand statement. I feel like, you know, at that time it was her grand statement, and it took her what, another 10 years to have another statement that was so grand? Or
well, Never Say Never 10 or 11. Also amazing.
That was a classic album. Let's not get it confused. Yeah, but that felt like a pop album. I didn't really identify with a lot of the things that were she was singing.
Yeah.
Like, and they weren't, no, not a lot of them were written by her.
You weren't feeling like
Macy. Like, have you ever?
Ever.
I was like, I wasn't old enough for how have you ever.
The first unrequited love. Listen, I probably wasn't going through an unrequited love type situation, but I felt like I was. Sure. So yeah, I could definitely see Never Say Never was also that album.
Right. But I mean, just, you know, to put a cap on at least me talking about Brandy. You can keep talking about Brandy.
Clearly
as much as you
it's
want.
So sad.
The reason I love Brandy, and I would actually consider her maybe my top five favorite contemporary R&B artists, yeah, is that she has always been true to herself. She's always made great music, and she's never really kept herself from her audience. Like, she has the perfect balance between living her life and bringing her life to her records.
Right, which is something that's funny that we talked about with Keyshawn.
Yeah, and putting too much out, not putting enough out. Brandy is just in the middle, and yeah, I think her musical ear has really made her so good. Like, I don't think Brandy's ever had a bad album.
Is it also her Coldplay covers?
Oh, yeah, well, the stuff that she did on Aphrodisiac, right. Like, I remember during that interview cycle or that album cycle, whatever, she would talk about how she would literally just listen to Coldplay.
Yeah.
She was obsessed with them. And then she sampled, I think, Clocks for one of the songs at the end of Aphrodisiac. And she's just always had a really good musical ear, and she knows how to make music her own. Yeah. And I think, you know, albeit sampling or be it through sampling or be it through singing someone else's song and really owning it.
Right.
I think she has a really natural talent for that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even have planned to talk about this, surprisingly enough, but we talked about this earlier. Non-R&B, Kendrick Lamar's I.
Oh. The I record, yes.
I think you were so focused on R&B music. So I have lost count as to how many songs I've played that album. I mean, I played that song. I think me and you have a different type of it. I think we both
I like it a lot.
Yeah, we both like it. What? Well,
I laid in bed this morning, like, listening to it on repeat before I got ready to come here.
I just really like, look at you, I didn't know that. It's about to tell your boss that.
That's why I was late.
I just really like the feel of it. Like, it is... I love the Isley Brothers sample, the way he uses it, and the message, and like a rapper, a Compton rapper, talking about self-love.
Yeah, I think
and
that's
all
crazy.
The shit that's going on around him. It's fun and catchy, and I feel like a lot of the conversation on Twitter was if this is the perfect first single, and you know, I mentioned how Swimming Pools was the first single. But it wasn't in the storyline of the album. Like, it made the deluxe version or bonus track of the album. So maybe this will be the case for this song, and maybe it doesn't give you a hint of the meat of the album, but who knows? Still, I think it's very enjoyable.
I mean, I love Kendrick, and just like anybody else. Right. I texted you when I first heard it, and mm-hmm. I was like...
I'm honored.
I think... I was like, this is not what I expected from a Kendrick right. record. I think everybody can agree with that.
Yes.
I think the first thing that stuck out to me was that it was so musically bright. Like,
yes.
I think there were very few records on, like, Section 80 or the debut.
Good Kid, Mad City.
That's the one.
Mm-hmm.
that actually had a really bright sound or had a really optimistic message. Right. Like, the only one that comes to mind from Good Kid, Mad City was Now or Never, which was the bonus track mm-hmm. or on the deluxe version with Mary J. Blige, which was actually nominated for a Grammy.
I guess for Good Kid, Mad City, Poetic Justice would be
no, that
like...
too. I mean, I would call that more of like a love record, right. Like a romance record.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about like upbeat or...
Well, yeah. I mean, the first thing that came to mind when I heard this, and I said this to you too, is that it reminded me so much of the Forrest Gump soundtrack. And like that's a double album that I grew up listening to because my parents like used to play all the time. But that's a bunch of like 60s. You know, they raised me well. It was a bunch of 60s and 70s records that were protest records. Yeah. And that's what this felt like. I felt like Kendrick is protesting against, you know, beef... protesting against like hatred, against all the shit in the world that kind of makes people go to war or, you know, fight with each other or whatever. He's just saying, like, love yourself, love others, and things will be okay.
Right.
I think that's an extremely brave move for any rapper to do against any musical background, be it like a happy beat or like a sad beat.
Right.
Or like a menacing beat. There are not many records that are telling you to love yourself.
I got a lot of, I felt like it also reminded me a lot of early Outkast.
That too.
Just where, like, you know, when they definitely had a message, they didn't deliver it the way other rappers at the time were delivering it.
Right. I mean, take, I think a really good example of that too is, like, you can look at Rosa Parks, which is such a fun song that has such a serious message.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought of.
Yeah.
But it does have, like, that fun feel, like CeeLo's FU song.
Right. And happy, you know, serious songs or, like, really aggressive songs that are delivered in such a happy way.
Right. Well, I think I've talked your ear off.
I think I've talked your ear off. I definitely have been talking a lot.
But we've both been talking a lot. So any final words?
I don't know. I'm excited for Brandy's next album.
Yeah.
I mean, 211 was, I thought, an awesome album. And, you know, I've heard she's cooking something up soon.
Yes.
So I'm just, that's on my release calendar right now.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
But thank you.
Cool. Thanks.